Welcome to the Supply Chain Innovators Podcast. On today's episode, we're highlighting a college professor who is training the next generation of supply chain experts. I am thrilled to introduce to you Dr. Muhammad Azmat. Dr. Azmat is not only known for being an assistant professor and deputy program director at Aston University, but is renowned for his expertise in disruptive technologies, consumer perspectives, and innovative business applications. Thank you so much, Dr. Azmat, for hopping on.
Thank you, Taylor, for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So before we dive in here, do you want to start us off with a bit about you and your background?
Sure. As you already know what I currently do, but there was a long journey for me to come here where I am today. So I started off my journey back in Pakistan, where I finished my bachelor's in business administration and an MBA. And I had the privilege of working on my own startup. So that is where I learned all the skills of logistics and supply chain. And that was after my bachelor's. And then suddenly I realized, okay, this is something I need to sort of look into deeply and I need to educate myself about this. And there was at that time very limited resources available in Pakistan. So I looked up abroad and looking at the West, I found one very good university that became my alma mater, Vienna University of Economics and Business. That's where I did my master's in supply chain and I did my PhD. And then I went to Oxford University for my postgraduate and I did the global challenges in transport and logistics and everything. Then I got a chance to start teaching at the same university where I graduated from. I jumped onto that opportunity. And long story short, then I found some really interesting opportunities in the UK. And I just thought that maybe it's time to go more international and leave the German speaking country aside, because my German skills were not really getting to the point where I can start teaching in German language. So I stick to the guns and I was like, okay, English is the next thing. Let's go to UK and start teaching there. So that's how I just ended up being here. But apart from working with Aston University as a full time, I also worked with many other universities across the globe. That includes universities in Turkey, Austria, Pakistan, Far East Asia, Vietnam, Hong Kong, and whatnot. So yeah, trying to be as global as supply chains are these days.
How many languages do you speak?
Okay, that's a good one. Six. So, I think that's not so amazing if you are living in the Europe, because in Europe, on average, everybody is speaking three or four languages. So that just sort of maybe slightly above average.
Yeah, that's true. As an American, I feel like maybe people speak two here.
Yeah. Which is the second one?
Probably Spanish, I would say.
Probably Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, that's so true, actually. I have had a chance to visit quite a lot of states in U.S. And I actually could say that after English, the only other language that hit the north was Spanish. So yeah, that's great.
Makes sense. Yeah, I think so. So what do you love most about the work you get to do every day?
Okay, so let me put it in perspective. There are two sides of an academic. One is, which everybody sort of knows, is that we teach, and that's pretty much it. Well, actually, that's not true. That's basically a very small part of academics' life, especially those academics who are also involved in research and other such things. So my work is sort of equally divided into academia in terms of teaching and then research. So I think that the research part is the part which I enjoy slightly better than just the academic teaching part. I do love the teaching element in my job. You get to meet some really new and interesting people every time. They come with their own stories. They come with their own understanding of what supply chain is, what logistics is, why they want to pursue a degree program in supply chain management. And then you get to learn a lot from them. So this is the part which I love. And then, I share the knowledge that I have with them. But the other part, which is research, that is very individual thing. So my areas are very sort of, some people call it science fiction. Some people call it, I don't know, you are doing something which is imaginary or something like that. And I talk about autonomous vehicles, drone swarms, or metaverse or something like this. It just sort of inspires me.
How do you pick the research you want to do?
So I actually, I got involved in all this technology by an accident. It was not planned that way. So like many other master's students who are doing their dissertation, I would have chosen a traditional topic and tried to fix some traditional problems in supply chain. But we were awarded certain group of topics, and somehow I was the last one to choose because I was traveling at that moment, and I came back and I saw that there's just one fruit hanging from the tree, and that was working on autonomous vehicles. And then I just kept asking, how am I going to work on this? How is it connected to supply chain management and whatnot? But surprise, surprise, that turned out to be the best I could have asked for. I mean, remember that this was back in 2015, and autonomous vehicles and all these technologies were still in infancy, and there were not many papers written about it, very limited knowledge. And whatever we had to do it from the scratch, all sorts of exploratory research and whatnot. So I sort of got another feather in my cap to become one of the first researchers and the first in the economic side or the business side who started working on autonomous vehicles in Austria. So that sort of gave me a kick. And I was like, okay, this is the right topic. That's future. That's what I wanted to do always.
Gotcha. So the research seemed too hard for some people. That's why they didn't choose that one.
Yeah. I mean, like, to be honest, from the student mindset, we are always looking for, you know, consider yourself a student. And if you are asked to write a piece of assessment, you would try to find the easiest piece that you can write on. You have plenty of stuff available, and then you have to not have to create the new philosophies and everything. Yeah. So yeah, I believe that was the reason.
So kind of going back to students, are there any misconceptions from students when they first get into supply chain? And like, why do they say that they want to learn about it?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question. See, over the past 7 or 8 years that I've been teaching, I've come to know one thing, that all students, if they are coming across the term supply chain management for the first time, they are plenty confused about it. For most, this is nothing more than logistics. For others, this might be some sort of transportation thinking. And then there are some people who talk only about production is supply chain or procurement is supply chain. I think what is missing here is sort of a holistic picture, how they look at things. And that is where we sort of, you know, sew it all together and try to tell them, you know, this is supply chain and this is not just in the pieces. It just sort of reminds me, if you know, that in Canada and also in Northern America, there are road trains, one truck pulling like 10 or 15 different components behind. So this is something like this. So supply chain is like this road train. And we need to sort of understand that everything has to go together if it needs to be sort of successful. So this is the kind of confusion we come across. The other thing is that maybe I think in the past couple of years during the COVID time, we have seen that there has been a huge boost in the supply chain education and supply chain professionals. And ever since they started to talk about supply chain disruptions, ever since there were shortages of toilet rolls on the shelves of the Tesco's and every other place. So I think that is something where the normal and common people, they got to know about what supply chain is and what it does and why is it so important. And then people started to pick up on this thing. Even today, as we speak, this is something which is a very an amazing field. But in the West, there is not only more investment in this thing, but there is more interest in research and development as well. Whereas in the rest of the world or developing economies like Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, other Far Eastern economies, this is still in the very immature stage, the concept of supply chain. So they're still stuck with the olden methods of doing business. So you see that there is this sort of disparity between what we know about supply chains, even though we are working very closely with all these nations, because most of the global stuff that we use comes from, let's say, Vietnam or Taiwan and other places like that. But the infrastructure, or the supply chain infrastructure in particular, is very weak there. So is the education.
Do you have any companies that you commonly refer to in your teaching?
So I used to talk about a lot of companies like, you know, Apple and their supply chain and Amazon and this and that. You know, this is amazing. They have very well-established supply chains. They are pioneers in many of the technologies that we use. But I have very recently tilted my focus from big conglomerates or big corporations to more small and medium-sized enterprises. Tila, we have to understand one thing that I think is sort of missing in academic circles at the moment, that we love to talk about these big companies, but we often neglect or ignore the smaller companies. Now, you would be surprised to maybe know this thing that 99.9% of the UK businesses are based on small and medium-sized enterprises. And there is only this 0.1% which are the huge companies. I know the huge companies, they have sort of decorum, or people sort of like it, you know, to be associated with Google and Apple and all these companies. But if you look at under the microscope for the normal day-to-day businesses and to keep the systems wheel running, these small and medium-sized enterprises play a pivotal role that we need to sort of understand. And my focus lately has been on these small and medium-sized enterprises in the UK, how their supply chain works, what are the challenges they are facing, how these graduates can basically maybe completely turn their wheels and make them a profitable entity, what kind of things and technologies might be needed for that. And very specifically, we have been focusing on creating or making graduates which with the capabilities of not only understanding the net zero, but also implementing the net zero and sustainable techniques and tools for any businesses, even if it's a startup or not. So yeah, we talk about like all sorts of companies I've just named a few. But I think the focus is now more shifting towards more SMEs, any small company and so on.
I'm so happy you said that. People should, you know, fall in love with drones or automated vehicle, like whatever it is that they like love and are so intrigued about, and then go in there because there's so many startups doing so many incredible things. Like, did you see somebody in the UK is doing grocery delivery by drone?
I think there are a few companies who have taken up the role of this thing. I know one company which is called Animal Dynamics. So this is one company that I was giving a talk in Brussels last year, and they approached me, and I was discussing about how we can use the drones in the humanitarian sector and drone swarms, how we can provide the relief using the autonomous vehicles and drones. And they approached me and they expressed their interest, and they had the prototype available and they are stationed in Oxford. So I had the opportunity to meet them. It was incredible the work they are doing. And I think I couldn't support enough. Like, you know, I really wish that they progress and proceed. And similarly, many other companies at this very small level, trying and testing their methods and techniques for grocery delivery, for medical supplies and other such things. So I think I've worked intensively, not only in academic circles, but beyond academia also, to bring together the technology and its business applications and make it available to the common businesses and people so that they can sort of utilize it. Most of the time, what happens is that we create some technology, but we forget to translate it into a layman's language so that others can actually understand something and use it. And we have seen many technologies came and go from very big companies and from small companies. We just couldn't translate it into a profitable business. So I think that's the most impressive thing about the SMEs, that they are willing to take certain risks, even though they do not have that deep pockets. But some of them are very visionary. They understand what the future might look like, and that's what they do.
That's interesting you say that too, because like AI, right? OpenAI took it and they made it easy and simple for people to use now, but this has been going on for years, I heard. Yeah. And people have been using something like a version of it, but it was not easy to use for the common person.
Exactly. And like if we look back and look at the progression of the AI that we use today in terms of OpenAI or Bard, we have been using predictive texts for a very long time. Like it goes as far back as you can remember, the Nokia phones that you could put under the table and start texting without even looking at it. I don't know if you're too young maybe to have experienced those phones. But I remember Nokia 3310 or something like this, maybe in the case studies, if you would have seen. So they were not smartphones, but still they had a function called T9, which was basically predictive text. So it would write the whole word without even you writing it completely. So what we see today is basically all built up onto that. But this one is more accessible. It is more natural. That is why it is called natural language models. And this is the advancement in technology. I sort of fascinate, like, you know, it's something that we need to sort of look into for the future.
Are students surprised when you mention, you know, these smaller companies that are creating like such incredible work? Are they like, wow, I didn't know that supply chain incorporated, you know, all of these different things?
Definitely, 100%. I mean, like very recently, what we have done is that there was a project going on, got the funding for that. It was UK-centric supply chain. It was focusing on providing some sort of consultation to the SMEs to streamline their supply chains. Now, what we have done is that we have asked these SMEs if they want to be on board with us and bring their practical problems and challenges that they're facing. And our master's students are going to resolve them in their master dissertation. So they would write a master dissertation, they would get credit for that, and they will get a very comprehensive feedback on the issues and challenges that they are facing. And remember that each master's student has two supervisors. So they have the expert always associated with them. So I think this is an awesome way of giving back to the community and the smaller businesses. So very after launching this thing, we received tons of applications from the SMEs. So they were very much interested. We selected 22 of those SMEs and our students are working with them. And now there is a growing number of these SMEs who wants to work with the students and try to find and fix the problems that they are facing at the moment. I think it translates it into everything that we have thought about and we want to do. Also, I think, Taylor, it is also important to understand that if you give students or you encourage students to think about local businesses, this also, after, of course, studying these local businesses and seeing that they are making some money and how they operate, what are the supply chain challenges and issues, all these things, it also sort of encourages them to be an entrepreneur. Instead of just going out and working for some other company, if they learn from these businesses, they are also being run by either one person or two people, friends who thought about opening up a pizza shop. So what are the logistics around this thing? So these are some of the things that I think also encourage them. It has bifold, trifold objective or incentives for the students to work in this domain.
I love that. Going on, touching in technology, what do you think technology is playing in the evolution of supply chain? And how are you incorporating it into your teaching? So like, do you talk about all the different technology that's coming about? Because I know some teachers or professors don't.
And I'm not one of those professors. If I was given a chance, I would just keep talking about technology all day long. So, no, I think technology is a major component of my research and teaching. Not only that, I teach technology. I try to make use of technology to teach technology. And I try to make use of technology so that students can learn what this technology is all about. I have worked and written about blockchain in supply chain. I have worked and written about autonomous vehicles and drones in logistics and supply chain. Similarly, I have talked about metaverse and the future of academia. Next week, I'm going to talk in one of the Economist events in London. And we are discussing how the future of manufacturing and production would change with the metaverse and stuff like that. So this is something sort of part of my life. And I think it would be unjust of me if I believe in something and I don't present it to the students I'm teaching. So for that reason, I always keep at least two lectures in any subject that I'm teaching, a course or module I'm teaching. Those two lectures are purely based on technology. So how the future Industry 4.0, the concepts, the questions that they ask, things that they want to know and they do not have any information or knowledge about these things. So I try to give them a very holistic picture. Of course, you cannot teach everything in 3 hours, but you give them a holistic picture, at least ignite their interest in learning more about it. And then many of them actually also select this as their dissertation topic and try to understand how they can further implement and learn from this technology. So I think technological revolution at the moment is amazing. It has huge potential, not only in terms of supply chain, academia, or teaching, but it would affect us all in some form or shape, one way or the other. And we need to be sort of prepared for the changes that are about to come. And we cannot be prepared. We can't be ready to embrace the technology if we do not know about it, if there is no awareness of this thing. If I can give you a very quick example, that until 2016, There was a survey, if I'm not wrong, 2016 or maybe 15, when they asked the people about Internet of Things and big data. Barely around 17% of the people, they knew about what IoT or what big data is. And when they repeated this survey 3 years later, because of the awareness, because of all the buzzwords and things that are happening around and media, of course, playing their part, it was over 80% of all the people who knew about IoT and what an IoT is. Our smartphones are IoT devices, our refrigerators, so basically anything connected with the internet is Internet of Things devices. So this was a kind of awareness, and how people have sort of accepted it in their life and they are okay and comfortable with everything that they're using, and they know that it has internet inside. So I think this is exactly what we need to do for the future as well. More advanced technologies are coming in. We have to see what role they are going to play and how we are going to sort of make people more aware of this thing.
I love that. So going off of students preparing, do you have any advice for them while they jump into their career, or what they could be focusing on while they're studying?
Advice part. Okay, so I think it is very important for students to understand one thing. I always talk to my students and my nephews and nieces. They are always talking to me about these things. You know, what, uncle, tell us, what should we do next? I don't know. They think that I'm a superhuman or something. I know everything. So I think it's very important to forecast future. You are in 2023, and if you are planning now to graduate in 2027 or 25 or 26, don't follow everybody else who is doing what they're doing today. Think about what would be needed in 2027. And once you graduate in that particular discipline, you would be a hotcake for every company out there. People often choose their dissertation topics based on the ease. I would recommend don't do it. If you are, then you are not the only one who is doing it, that they are selecting the topic based on how easy it is going to write about this stuff. Try to select a more technologically advanced, technically innovative topics, and try to work on a real life problem. It doesn't matter if the company is paying you or if company is supporting you. Think of it as if you are making an investment in your future. So if you come out with a positive solution to an existing problem, and that solution is also technologically advanced solution, it's an innovative solution to that particular or traditional problem, then trust me, your chances of getting into a dream job or maybe starting your own company and surrounding the solution that you have come up with are going to sort of, there's going to be an exponential increase in those sort of chances. I think this is something which is sort of very important. I think that the world is changing, the trends are changing. We cannot think of people who, I mean, like the West is a lot different than what the Eastern societies and communities are. For them, anybody who has to graduate, either become a doctor or a engineer or something like this. I would really want to stress on this thing, all those minority diasporas in US or in UK, that they should also consider that there are many other disciplines out there which are very good for their children, and they should allow them to pick and choose what they really want to do or how they look at the future. So this is something also very important. Not often it happens, but yeah, we should at least talk about it. Supply chain, for example, is one such area that if it was in my realms, I would suggest day and night people to do this thing. It is something similar to computer sciences, or it is a universal language. It doesn't matter which country you go to, they have supply chain, they have similar issues. And if you know how to fix it in the US, you would know how to fix it in the UK as well. So this is something which is the most beautiful thing about it.
I love that. Do you have anything you are super passionate about kind of moving into the future, whether that's a technology, a trend?
I think I'm a bit biased anyways about the usage of drones and its different applications. But I think the future is not going to be something like this, where different technologies are working in isolation. This is not the future. This is not the concept of smart cities. This is not the concept of Industry 4.0. I think everything which we talk about in isolation today have to work in conjunction with one another in the future, so that we can create that sense of smart cities and smart technologies and a smart infrastructure where everything is talking to everything else and things are happening autonomously. Yeah, but with this comes lots of ethical dilemmas and whatnot. I'm not going to go into the debate of that, but yes. But I think the focus has been on predictive analytics and big data analytics. Based on that, how we can use that information in artificial intelligence and other such products like AVs and drones and drone swarms. I think this is going to be the future.
Exciting. Well, sadly, our time's coming to an end. But before we jump off, do you have anything next for you?
Well, next is that I need to sort of keep my head down, focus on things that I have already in pipeline, try to finish off my projects, deliver on those, and fulfill my commitments. I think that is at the moment my topmost priority. I need to sort of maybe find a more better work-life balance because I think I have somehow become a workaholic or something. Hardly get any time. So with all the traveling.
You're running all around.
Yes. I mean, like people sometimes often say to me, wow, you have a great lifestyle. One day you are in Istanbul, the other day you are in Vietnam and then Hong Kong and whatnot. And I'm like, dude, just live my life one day and then you will regret it that you asked for it. Yes. But yeah, I think that's what it is. And fingers crossed, let's see how it goes.
Nice. Well, it's been so great speaking with you. And if people want to follow your journey and keep up with you, is there anywhere that they can go?
Sure, they can follow me on LinkedIn. It's open to public and I can share my link with you and you can share, pass it on or maybe put it on the podcast or something. But if they want to, they can use that link and get in touch with me. Otherwise, email is always there to get in touch.
Awesome. Well, Dr. Azmat, it's been so great talking to you. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Leah. Thanks for having me.